welcome to Ladies Who London podcast. I'm Emily Dell.
And I'm Alex Lacey, and we are qualified London Blue Badge tourist guides.
Each week, we bring to you some of the best bits of London.
We overemphasise our words and we talk about our favourite people, places and events with a bit of information, a lot of laughs and a whole lot of fun. You did that. You started that.
We found on Instagram. I know. We've been found on Instagram at Ladies Who London Podcast and on our websites, which I'm changing actually, but for now it's guideemily.com.
And alexlacey.com, as well as our dedicated website, ladieswholondon.com. Well, Emily, big changes in your life this week.
Big changes. I've moved.
You've moved. You're still the same distance away from me, which makes me feel a bit better.
Yeah, not far, just a couple of stops south. And yeah. It's lovely. I'm in Broccoli and it's so leafy. And I don't know, it's just got a very calm vibe about it. I'm feeling good. There's so much to do though. Oh my goodness me, there's like dust everywhere and boxes and
Moving house is the worst and the best.
It's both. I've opened so many bottles of wine this week. It's just like, gosh, it's the only thing I can get to.
Yeah, just the box marked urgent.
Yes, exactly.
Well, congratulations on your new move. And we should say that the audio this week is a bit different because Emily hasn't yet got her internet installed. So she is currently streaming from a hotspot on her phone, which is not the stronger. So there is a bit of a lag this week. There's a bit of dropping out. I'll try and edit it as much as I can to make it as seamless as possible, but it won't be quite as crisp this week. So thanks for bearing with us. And I should say in advance that, you know, that I don't know if anyone's noticed that there's a new TV show on Netflix called Man versus Bee. And it's Rowan Atkinson, basically Mr. Bean style versus a bee. Well, I've got the same thing this week, except it's a bird. And he has been waking me up at all times of the day and night. Well, mostly night, although I have been napping. By sitting outside my window and being very, very noisy. And he has taken up residence in my garden tonight. And he will probably be interrupting the entire podcast. So apologies for that. But I have a nemesis.
Oh, he probably just wants to come in, Alex.
Well, he can't.
With you. Oh, all right.
Well, he can't. He's a noisy devil. So apologies if you hear him in the background. It is what it is this week. Chaos.
It does sound like a bit of a kind of a squeak, doesn't it? Or yeah. A little undertone laugh.
Yeah, Emily thought it was me laughing, which is
it was, why are you
slightly
laughing?
Offensive.
I'm telling you about... Well, anyway, we'll find out.
So, before we get going into the podcast, any shout-outs?
Just as a reminder, really, for the 15th of August, please do not forget to sign up because we're just literally 2 weeks away.
Yay! Exciting.
100th episode, Alex.
100th episode. I'm so excited.
They say when you get to the 100th episode...
You quit?
Then, yeah, that's it. You know, you can't. So... Just to let you know, guys. No, like, you know, it's really important. Quite a few people have said that. They've said when you get to the 100th episode, you know, it's you mean business and things start to happen.
Do we get a telegraph from the Queen?
Yeah. Oh, that's I already got I mine. Did you not
Oh, did
yours?
You? Oh, all right, fine.
Yeah. Well, you get that, the 95th.
Just one of us gets it, right?
Yes.
Just
yes,
you.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, I've got a little shout out to do this week and I'm hoping they're listening. Because the other night I went to the pub with our very good friend Maitland, who also listens, so shout out to Maitland. Hello, my darling. And we got chatting, because Maitland is one of the loveliest humans you'll ever meet in your entire life, and she'll chat to anyone. And when I got to the pub, she'd already made friends with a lovely couple called Paul and Lisa, who were visiting over from Thailand. Paul's British, Lisa's American, and they live in Thailand. And we got chatting, and basically Maitland pitched the podcast to them. And Paul got very excited by the topics and said he was going to listen. So hopefully, Paul and Lisa, you're out there listening. If not, then, well, you'll never hear this, but, you know, I'll hunt you down. But hopefully you're listening and you'll enjoy catching up on the back catalogue.
Well, hello, Paul and Lisa.
Thank you for letting us join your table for a little bit. So there we go. Now, before we go into podcast, it's podcast pedestal. We have to vote or figure out what the votes were for last week's episode. What was your pick?
So, well, we were talking about the garrotting, the garrotting
19th century garrotting panic. Yeah.
A panic, yes. The garrotting panic of the 19th century. I mean,
mad, isn't it?
Absolutely bonkers, really. So, do you remember what you went for?
I've really got to up my game in my choices. I think I'm going for boring choices and you're going for really good ones. I went for the MP being garrotted, which was
boring.
A crux turning point. Shut up. It was a crux turning point, but it's quite a boring one. Whereas you went for
the anti-garrotting collar.
Yeah, all right. You're just pandering to the public here. Pandering with your cheap jokes and, you know, rubbish choices that win, because of course you've won again this week, haven't you?
Yes, I don't need to pander. The facts are the facts.
Yeah, I picked a boring one.
Oh, thank you very much, everybody. Thank you for...
Yeah, whatever. All right, move on.
With my anti-garrotting collar.
Yes. Well done. Congratulations. I'm not at all getting a complex about it.
Come on, Alex. You can do this next week.
Yeah, I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it. I might need your help when I get there.
Yeah.
Right, so on to this week. Where are we this week?
Well, if you remember, the will span and it landed on good old Westminster. And I decided to choose something or somebody that a request came in for quite a while back, actually. Somebody requested that we spoke about Boudicca.
Boudicca, oh yes, yes.
Boudicca.
What was the bodacious?
Bodacious.
Yes. Love
so
it.
So if you missed last week, I was telling Alex and you know, everyone else that was listening, that I took a client around Westminster a few weeks ago. It was an American lady and she said, "When are we going to see Bodacious?"
Bodacious, I love it.
Yeah, and you know, bodacious, vivacious, courageous, outrageous.
That's enough about you. Let's talk about Boudicca.
Yeah, exactly. Just to say as well, the reason why I chose Westminster is because if you go to Westminster Bridge, if you're on the north side of Westminster Bridge, just basically underneath Big Ben's clock tower, then you will find a statue of Boudicca, and she has her arms outstretched and she is on a chariot with her two daughters at the back. You know, in that area, your eyes and your head is going to so many different places. You're going to the Thames, to the London Eye, to Parliament. But it's such an incredible sculpture. And I spent about half an hour just looking at it the other day. Absolute freak.
That's the point at which the police start going, "We're going to start tailing her because she's being weird."
Exactly. Why is she stroking the chariot and the horse's head? What's going on here? She's trying to get up on the monument and kiss her. No, I wasn't doing that. But yes, basically, we're going to talk about this wonderful woman, this absolute powerhouse of a lady. And we are in the time frame of about 60, 61 AD.
Cast your minds back, if you will.
Cast your minds back. And we're talking about the name. Obviously, this woman, she called her Bodacious. And there's been so many different names for her. The reason why we call her Boudicca, or we know her as Boudicca, is because of a Roman historian. Two, actually, Roman historians. One of which is called Tacitus and one is Cassius. And it's a bit of a biased opinion, perhaps, because we're going to be talking about this powerful woman that wanted to defeat the Romans. And these were two Roman historians. So
if this was GCSE history, we'd be doing the whole, now, how can we validate the bias? How can we look at which side is going to be, you know, what? I used to love all that stuff.
Yeah, me too. But we know that Tacitus, he referred to her as Boudicca with two C's, but we later believe actually it's just one C. We had, in the 16th century, someone referring to her as Voadacia, which
I like that.
Edmund Spenser, who we are familiar with. Westminster Abbey, the very reason really that we have Poets' Corner.
Oh, him. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, going mad.
So this was a writer who was enamoured with Geoffrey Chaucer and wanted to be next to him in terms of his burial. And this kind of sparked off the whole Poet's Corner saga. Well, it's not really a saga, but it's just a thing. He referred to her as Bunduca.
Bunduca? I'm not sure I like that as much.
No, it sounds a little bit kind of off to the toilet. I don't know. Doesn't sound like
you're a classy bird, Emily Dell.
Oh, I know. In the 18th century, there was a poem written by William Cowper, and he referred to her as Boadacea, which is quite like bodacious, I guess.
Because when I was a kid, we always knew her as Boadicea or Boadicea.
Yeah, Boadicea, Boudica. Anyway, so we're going to be talking about this woman. And, you know, what do we know about her? Well, we know that she was born around 30 AD, potentially in Colchester, an area that I'm going to be coming back to with our tale today. Apparently, she was quite tall. She had flowing red hair below her waist.
Fabulous.
It is said that she had quite a harsh voice.
Oh.
How would you describe a harsh voice?
Was she a posh white woman?
Yeah, maybe. Sounded like you.
Yeah.
piercing glare. And she wore this kind of large golden neck ring known as a torque. And if you go to the British Museum, you find so many torques. And apparently if you wore it around your neck, then you were a warrior, a chieftain, someone really important. Mm. And this was kind of like a gold, and it was twisted around, almost kind of like a chokey, I guess. And apparently it symbolised a warrior's readiness to sacrifice themselves for the tribe at any given moment.
Ooh.
So, you know, the plot pretty thickens. Powerful woman. The plot thickens. She wore a multicoloured tunic and a thick cloak fastened by a shiny brooch.
Very nice.
Yeah, quite nice. But apparently quite terrifying at the same time. I mean, it sounds lovely, you know, with her long red flowing hair, her brooch, her jewellery, but also very terrifying. Although she had quite a few eligible suitors, quite a few people seeking her hand in marriage. And we know that she was part of a Celtic tribe. And when we say the Celts, we're basically referring to the ancient people of the UK. And we know her from a tribe, because there were lots of different tribes, lots of different strands that went off in different directions. And she was the queen of the Iceni, or Iceni. How do you pronounce it?
What do I say? Iceni? I think I say Iceni.
Iceni, yeah, I usually say Iceni. So the Iceni tribe, which today is basically Norfolk. And if you don't know Norfolk, we're kind of on the east side of Great Britain.
The lumpy bit on the right.
And the lumpy bit on the right, exactly. And every kind of tribe had their own customs, but they didn't keep that much in the way of records. So it's quite thankful that we had those, the Roman historians that told us so much. And something that they did tell us was that the Celts, they fought naked on the battlefield. Ooh. Which is quite
spicy.
Spicy. They were known to paint themselves blue, to be quite fearful, I guess. And they were known to cover themselves in all sorts of designs, and they painted their faces. And this is why they were referred to as the Picts, because they were the painted people. Mm. On the battlefield, they would grunt like animals. They would blow through animal horns to startle the enemy. And this is a tribe that would not think twice about taking your head off. Yes, they were quite quite brutal, should we say. And they believed that it was the head that held all of the power and the man's soul. So they were quite well known to behead their victims and put them on spikes. But very intelligent people. They were the ones that invented chainmail, which, of course, protected them from swords. And I don't know about you, but I always thought that it was the Romans that were the ones that kind of started to pave roads, were the first one to kind of create roads that, you know, still knit the country together today. Mm. But actually, this was the Celts, the Celtic tribe. They were the ones that started to pave first, yeah. And actually, if you go to an area in England called Thetford, have you heard of Thetford?
Yes. Now, where's Thetford? It's not Deptford. It's where we live.
No, it's not Thetford. So it's kind of north of Bury St Edmunds, kind of quite close to King's Lynn, area, far away from Norfolk. But there used to be an area called the Iceni Village, which doesn't exist anymore, but you can find the Ancient House Museum, which will tell you all about this particular tribe. And there's all sorts of different things on display, like pictures that we believe that they would have looked like on the battlefield.
Amazing.
Now, going back to good old Boudica, she did marry. I told you that there are quite a few people tapping on her shoulder to get a little cheeky kiss. Well, she married a king, and he was called Prasutagus. So he was the king of the Iceni tribe, which made her queen of the Iceni tribe. He was very wealthy, as the Celts were. I mean, they had a lot of gold. They had a lot of different things that they could trade with. And him and his wife, they had two daughters. Unfortunately, we do not know their names. Okay. And I told you at the beginning of this that we are talking about Boudica, who went against the Romans. Mm-hmm. So to go back a little bit, we know that the Romans came in 43. We know that they came in with Roman Emperor Claudius, who had a bit of an iron fist, shall we say. And at this point, the Iceni tribe, they lived a quiet life. They were pretty much undisturbed. They didn't really want to fight unless they really needed to. And the first move that they made was to be nice and welcome the Romans. And the king,
Boudica's
husband,
classic British hospitality, isn't it, really?
Absolutely. Come in, have a cup of tea, sit down. Look, we're peaceful people. It's all good. Yeah. And actually the king told the emperor, look, when I pass away, the Iceni tribe will be underneath Roman rule. So, I guess he's saying this because he was a little bit worried about the amount of Romans that were coming in. Plus, they were coming in with weaponry. Mm. They seemed like they knew what they were doing on the battlefield. So, the king is kind of feeling a little bit uneasy and wants to integrate with the Romans as much as possible. They share currency, and the Romans basically give the Britons, the Celts, 40 million sesterces, which are probably sesterces.
Which is
how many sisters?
How's that spelled?
Sesterces. S-E-S-T-E-R-C-E-R-S. I know it's sesterces. So the Celts were given 40 million sesterces, and they didn't need it. As I say, they had money, but they thought, we'll take this to kind of integrate and come together. But they knew that this was basically lent, and the Romans would want that back at some point with interest as well. Now, Claudius eventually gives over the reign. He dies and gives it to Emperor Nero. And Nero was somebody that was a bit of a spender, a bit of a spenderholic, you might say. And he was somebody that certainly, if there was a loan going and, he needed it back, he was going to be sending somebody out called Paulinus, who was the governor of the great army for Rome. He was the one who was going around basically knocking on the doors to people that they had given money to.
It's like one a fancy debt collector.
Yeah, exactly. Is the king. Now we're in 60 AD. The king dies. His wife, Boudica, becomes chief. So she becomes queen in her own right. So it doesn't get passed down to the daughters. Okay. And, this is quite a progressive tribe. They allowed women to rule. They allowed women to take part in politics. They made art. It was them who decided who they were going to marry. You could also get a divorce as well. Oh. And what is quite strange, if a man was abusive to his wife, she had the right to poison him or behead him.
Oh. I mean,
bring
that's...
that back.
<I'm joking. laughs> Wow, that's maybe a step too far.
I'm joking.
It's quite a lot, isn't it?
Not listening to our podcast. It's fine.
That's a lot.
That is a lot. Yeah. So basically, the king dies and the loan, it said, was used as a bit of an excuse. So Nero, who sends his mate Paul in to basically knock on the door to Boudica, who's now the queen of the Iceni tribe. And he says, do you remember all of that, sisters, that we gave you? We need it back immediately. But they actually didn't have the money at the time, even though they had a lot of gold and a lot of wealth. They didn't have enough to give them the money back.
No sisters.
So this is where the Romans suddenly become incredibly aggressive towards the Iceni people. Every single home is basically kind of damaged. You've got the Romans going in there, capturing men, making them slaves. They are assaulting women, including Boudicca's two daughters. And Boudicca hears about this, so she tries to rescue her daughters. And with that, the soldiers take her, they take all of her clothes off, they beat her body in front of all of her people.
Oish.
And this sparks absolute outrage. And all of the leaders of the local tribes of the Celts, which I have to say, even though they were peaceful, there was still a little bit of friction between the tribes. And at this point, they all come together and realize that they cannot let the Romans take over their country. And it's believed that Boudicca says nothing is safe from Roman pride and arrogance. They will deface the sacred and will deflower our virgins, win the battle, or perish. That is what I, a woman, will do.
Wow, that's fighting talk, Boudicca.
It is. And years and years ago, I did, I dibble dabbled in a bit of theatre, did this
Sailor
Boudicca
clown.
production. Yeah, let's go back to the Sailor Clown. And we did a piece on Boudicca. And I remember the character of Boudicca, this woman who was playing her, said this speech. And me and my friend Tom had to come forward and we had to, really kind of like go rah or like scream or be aggressive. And we egged each other on to come to the front of the stage, put our fingers to our lips and go.
What?
was so silly because everyone was expecting we didn't care. We were just like in our own little kind of camp of amusement, I guess. We were quite
Oh
young,
my
this is years and years ago, and
goodness.
we got told
Emily, I have
off
to say, I'm
royally.
so glad I never saw any of your theatre productions.
Honestly, the drums were going, it was so funny. And then me and my friend Tom, we just went dun 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 dun. So silly. Oh. Anyway, so we've got Fury. We've got a queen. They're armed with swords. They've got horse-drawn chariots. They've got their battle paint on. They're not wearing any clothes, apparently. They're ready. And Boudicca, she's not the only woman that's fighting. This is, as I say, the Celts were pretty progressive, and women were allowed to fight on the battlefield. Now, before we come to Londinium, we actually go to Colchester, the area that we think that Boudicca was born, and they decide to pounce on Colchester. Paul, who I spoke of earlier, who was, the person that was the big debt collector, Paulinus,
Paulinus.
he is basically out of town. He's not in Colchester. They're wanting to take over this island in Wales, Anglesey. He's got all of his troops, all of his soldiers, they're over in Wales. So Boudicca think, right, this is our time. We are going to pounce. So they go into Colchester and they burn absolutely everything. Roman men, women, and children are slaughtered on the streets.
Oh dear.
So at this point, Paulinus, he hears word that Colchester has been taken over by a queen and he's thinking, oh, a woman. All right, send over 200 Romans, send over 200 Roman slaves. So he sends into Colchester 200 slaves that are unarmed, but he thinks basically they can, just sort things out, kind of calm things down, have a little chat to the woman,
We'll show you,
And
Paulinus.
exactly. How many troops do you think that Boudicca has at this point in Colchester?
Oh, I mean, I don't know what's a large number for a
Hundreds coming in.
Celtish army. A couple of hundred, maybe 300, something like that.
120,000.
Oh, whoa, okay. That's a lot.
120,000. So you
That
can
feels like that's
imagine
the
very, very
entire
quickly.
population of England at that time or something.
Yeah, I think so. Well, I think probably quite a few people came in as well from elsewhere. It didn't take long for that, fury to kind of jump off the island as well, I'm sure. So she's been underestimated. You've got these 200 slaves that have gone in. He suddenly thinks, okay, obviously this is not enough. So he sends in an additional 2,500 Roman soldiers. This time they are armed, but there's no way that they're ever going to survive Boudicca and all of these people. In Colchester, you would have found at this point a temple to Claudius, and this was a gruesome scene of heads that were basically everywhere.
Oh,
You've got
geez.
blood, like it's honestly terrible. And I don't know, I thought of Boudica, having a lot of rage in her, but actually they're quite barbaric in the way that they go in. They take over Roman cemeteries, they break tombstones, they kind of smash down statues, all sorts of different things. Cassius says all this ruin was brought upon the Romans by a woman, a fact which calls them the greatest shame.
Sucks to be you, Romans.
Exactly, sucks to be you. Now, at this point, they go into Londinium. So, Londinium, aka the City of London. So, at this point, we've got about 230,000 soldiers that are on Boudica's team. So, we've
Wow.
gone up a little bit because quite a few men have been set free. Quite a few tribal men that were originally prisoned in Londinium, they've been set free. So, we've now got about 230,000. After burning Londinium to the ground, and we know that she did this because there's been so many archaeological digs where they've actually found the ashes, haven't they? And found the particles of when Boudica burned Londinium to the ground. After this, they then go to what we now know as St. Albans. And at this point, it's believed nearly 80,000 Romans have been killed by Boudica and Boudica's
What?
people. 80,000.
That's huge.
That's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's absolutely crazy. In a very short space of time as well, because as I say, this is, 60 to 61 AD, very quick turn of events. And Nero was actually considering taking the Romans out of Britain. Now, if he did that, I don't know what Britain would be today, really. The Celtic tribes would all have been united. You would have had this kind of feeling of independence for Britain. It would have been really, really strange. But good old Paul, he says,
Yeah.
Nero, honestly, don't worry about it. Just trust me. Trust me. I will sort this out. So we have
Over
what
here,
is
taking our
known,
Romans.
taking our Romans. So we have this last battle, and this is known as the Battle of Watling Street. The exact location, we're not 100% sure, but we think it's kind of around Colchester. Anyway, we've got about 10,000 troops in total for the Roman side. And that's not as many as Boudica's tribe has got, of course. But the Romans, they were a little bit more equipped. They knew the area a bit more because they'd been living in Colchester for quite some time or around that area. They had a lot more weapons. So the
Also, can
Roman
you hear
soldiers
that?
had
Like, can you hear that
huge.
really noisy bird? He's not going now.
Yes, I keep thinking it's you laughing.
No, it's not me laughing, but
Like,
it's like, yeah, it's one really
yeah, I can
noisy bird. There's
hear.
nothing I can do about him.
Yeah, I can hear, I can hear. So the Roman soldiers, they had shoes with nails at the bottom, and this prevented them from slipping on grass. So, they were quite forward thinking when it came to the battlefield. The Celts must have been pretty confident because where this battle took place, where you had, thousands and thousands of Celts, behind them you had lots of chariots with family members on board. There were animals there. It was almost as if they were just ready for a show. They had front row seats to the most gruesome battle that they ever would have seen. So to have them on the battlefield as well, people that weren't there to fight, but just to view it so close to the troops, it kind of suggests that they were pretty confident.
Yeah.
Now, the Romans, they stood side by side. They were crouched together behind their shields. The Celts did not have shields. And what happened was the Celts moved towards the Romans, and the Romans threw spears at them, which actually went all the way through their chainmail. So the chainmail didn't really save them at that point. And the Romans were quite clever in the way that they would rotate. So where you
Clever.
had a line of Romans, they've got their shields in front of them. The Celt comes towards them. They take their knife and they stab the enemy. They then go back whilst the enemy is in pain, and the new Roman behind them comes forward with their shield and stabs. So every time a Roman stabs with the sword, they've got fresh energy, fresh kind of feeling in their arm, and they keep on doing that. They keep on rotating. So the one that's just stabbed is going to go back and all the way to the back, and then the new ones are going to keep on coming forward.
Jeez,
and they push and they push. Yeah. They push, and remember, you've got that kind of band of chariots and people, and this basically crushes the Celts. They can't go anywhere because you've got so many chariots, and they're basically backed up to the back of a forest. You've got all of these trees and they can't move. So in the end, it is believed that about 80,000 Celtic men, women, children, animals are killed during this battle. And yeah, and it's believed about 400 Romans were killed.
Oh, blimey. I mean, that's very sort of uneven, isn't that? But yeah. In terms of the actual numbers, and oh goodness, that's awful.
Yeah, completely. And it's all due to weaponry. I think the Celts, they were a little bit, maybe a bit too confident by what just happened in St Albans and Londinium and Colchester, and thought, we've got this team. But the saying the word squirrel. I just can't do it. The squirrel. I can't say squirrel. Oh, please. I don't know why I said that.
Oh,
yeah.
Emily, squirrel. I love you so much.
I can't say squirrel. Squirrel.
I did not know you couldn't say squirrel.
I know. Squirrel. I mean, how many times did you say it? Apart from when you're taking a group through St James's Park and they go, "What's that?" And you go, "It's a squirrel." So I've never heard of that before.
Just not saying it's a badger.
It's a badger, exactly. Badger, big bushy tail, you know. Anyway, Boudica, she manages to get away, but we don't know how she dies. Some say that she poisoned herself so that the Romans couldn't get to her. Some say that she died from an illness. In terms of where her body is, some say that she's under 9 3/4 platform. Some say that she's underneath a McDonald's in Birmingham. Yeah, at King's Cross, 9 3/4. But in 2001, the Wet Wang graves were discovered. And within these
great
graves,
name, I'm just going to put that out there.
The Wet Wang. I know, it's fantastic, isn't it? The Wet Wang graves. They find this kind of Iron Age ditch in this medieval house, and they find this kind of like a rectangular box. And it's huge. And in it, you've got this massive indentations of what used to be a chariot. So you've got the voids where the wood would have been, a little bit like, you know, if we hark back to the good old rivet days when we were talking about
the ship burial.
Where you had the indentation of the ship, the wood have, of course, like kind of perished and gone away. And this is a little bit like that. So you had the shape of the chariot. Iron linchpins were found. Wow. There was what was believed to be a mirror, which suggests that you would have had a woman in there. Bones of a woman were eventually found. There were bones of a pig believed to have been buried with this person.
How do I not know about this? This is bonkers.
Yeah, and it's in the British Museum. Wet Wang graves. Yeah, it's in there.
Where?
Yeah. So it's in the same room. It's not too far away from Sutton Hoo.
Really?
Yeah. It's kind of the room a little bit before that. I don't know if you quite where you've got kind of bits of Stonehenge.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Right. Yeah. I'm gonna have to go and have a rummage.
Yeah, absolutely. So all sorts of fantastic things, expensive things. So the person that was buried, we know that it was a woman. We know that she must have been some kind of chieftain or queen. We know that she was about in her 30s, which we think Boudica was. Mm-hmm. And in 2018, I think it was, or maybe just before, Oxford University did a bit of carbon dating, but dated it to 145 BC. Okay. However, a little bit later, I mean, Cambridge came out and said, well, actually, we've realised that carbon dating is out about 700 years.
It's not like Oxford and Cambridge to fight, is it?
Well, I know. How strange.
So it could be. I mean, we obviously didn't just have Boudicca as the only woman that fought on the battlefield. There were quite a few, but it's quite intriguing and exciting to think that it could be.
Oh, that would be amazing. Yeah, I didn't know about that at all.
And to kind of go back to where we began with this statue in Westminster of Boudicca, it's called Boudicca and Her Daughters. It was created by Thomas Thornycroft. And as I say, it's got so much movement. It's obviously a sculpture, it's steel, but the way that the fabric around her cloak waves in the wind, and you've got her daughters crouching just behind their mother, and you can see this pure rage in her eyes. How dare you do this to my people, to my daughters? And this was something that was created by Thornycroft, a guy called Thomas Thornycroft, who actually completed it in 1885. I say completed it. Actually, there weren't the funds to actually have it cast in bronze until I think in the 1890s, maybe 1890s. But I know that it wasn't put on display until 1902, which is actually 17 years after the sculptor actually died. But it's a fantastic piece, and you can find it on top of this huge granite plinth.
It's
And
beautiful. It's very
if
kind
you've
of
not
almost
looked it,
romantic, isn't it?
yeah, it is a bit,
Sort
yeah.
of the
But
clouds billowing, and you've got the now whether or not this was true, the sort of spikes on the chariot wheels as well, which again might be a slightly romantic image of chariot wheels, but it's a fabulous sculpture.
yeah, absolutely. And she, it was kind of in the 19th century, in the Victorian period, when Queen Victoria kind of talked about Boudicca, and they've got kind of like a name connection, because Boudicca apparently means victory and Victoria means victory. And yeah, so what a fascinating woman.
Yeah,
So there we go.
absolutely.
Bit of
Well,
Boudicca,
to be fair, I think you doing that is probably my favorite bit of the entire thing. Just
Oh
I
my
don't know if that
God,
can
I
be my
couldn't have
crux
done
point.
that for 20 minutes.
Amazing. I think Boudicca is incredible. She's a story that I like to tell people because, she is such a like you say, we know bits about her, but we don't know all the details because, of course, she was so long ago. But yet, 2,000 years later, she's still a very strong person in the kind of British psyche, isn't she? Really important.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Fab. Thank
I
you,
remember getting
Em.
a book last year for my birthday, and it had all sorts of powerful women in the past, and I think Boudicca was on the front cover, actually.
Oh, really? Well, she's the classic, isn't she? She's a warrior queen. She's fabulous. Thank
Absolutely.
you so much.
Podcast Pedestal.
So, podcast
Cool.
pedestal.
Yes, I know exactly what I want to go for.
Oh, do you? Okay, go for it.
I do. I'm going straight in. So I want to go for her daughters, because although, I mean, she might have attacked the Romans if they didn't do her daughters wrong, but I think that really tipped her over the edge. And so I think because the daughters feature so heavily on the skull and the chariot, I think, they're a very important part of her story and what went on after.
Interesting. Yeah, I agree. I think that's a really good choice, and I need to make a better choices with my podcast pedestals, don't I? Because I'm not doing very well lately. What am I gonna pick? Oh, this is so tough. Gosh, I'm gonna go for the. Oh no, what am I going for? I'm gonna go for the graves at Wet Wang
Oh, okay.
because I love the mystery of it. It might be her. We don't know. Is that a good one to go for? I don't know.
I
I
think
think of
so.
I'm just I'm useless at now figuring out what the really important bits of the story are. It's either that or it's no, actually, I tell you what. Oh no, I don't know. Indecision. Or should I go for Paulina sending this sort of unarmed group of slaves back, going, "Oh, it's a woman." Which do you
I
think
think
is the
that's a
better one?
pretty good
Do you
one.
reckon that
Yeah,
one?
because it's it's underestimating the force of this woman.
Yeah, let's go for Paulina's underestimating Boudicca. Let's go for that.
Okay. All right. Yeah. I think that's a pretty good choice.
Good. Yeah. I need some guidance, I think, because I'm not doing very well.
Mate, honestly. Well, we'll see. We'll see what the public think.
Yes. Come and let us know your choice for that. And I have to say, I will try and put it up on my Instagram this week. I have had a bit of a break from Instagram. I don't know why, I've been so tired lately, and I think I just needed to step back for a bit. So I'm going to try and get back on the Insta train. So hopefully it'll be back up on my stories this week, assuming I remember to log into Instagram this week, because I've just had a bit of an unenforced break. But yeah, come and vote, which will be going up at some point this week. Which you think it is? So it's either Paulina's underestimating Boudicca and her might, or it is her daughters, which are the kind of the real thing that she was fighting for, or that galvanized her into action. There we go.
The Wheel of Destiny.
Right, I'm going to spin it. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Off we go. Wimbledon.
Oh, Wimbledon. We haven't had that before, don't we?
Yeah, I put it on yesterday. I know, I put it on yesterday.
Oh, did you? Yeah. You've got to stop changing them all the time, because people are going to think we're fixing it.
We don't change it that often.
Well, okay. Now, it's funny, because I do have a couple of people who I have for my Wimbledon one. The great thing about Wimbledon is you can be a bit, go off at tangent from Wimbledon, because there are so many people who've won Wimbledon who might not necessarily be British, but who have a link, and therefore you can go off at a tangent. So will you permit me to go off at a complete tangent about someone who I found out about a couple of years ago, who is fascinating, but he's not English, he's French, but he won Wimbledon.
Well, I don't know if you've got a choice, have I?
Not really.
No, so tell us, who are you going to talk about?
So I'm going to talk about a man called Jean Borotra.
Jean Borotra, yeah. Look at you and your pronunciation.
Jean Borotra, who was in, well, there's actually quite a few really interesting things about him, and it's basically not going to be linked to London at all, apart from the fact that he won Wimbledon. But he was involved in a very interesting way in the Second World War, and also had a very interesting link to women's sport, which is quite pertinent at the moment, given that we've in fact, women's football, it's quite pertinent, because of course we had the women's Euros this week, and England won. The Lionesses won. Well done, Lionesses. Yay! Woo. So I'm going to talk about Jean Borotra, because
okay,
super interesting.
We'll allow that.
Cool.
Nice.
I mean, it's a good story, so
okay, well, I'm excited. I don't know anything about him apart from the fact that he won Wimbledon.
There we go. That'll
there
do
we go.
Well, that's it for this week. Thank you all so much for coming and for putting up with the slightly less than perfect audio this week. But between Emily's new house and my bird with a grudge out the back, we've got through. We're good.
We got through. But yeah, apologies that it's not as crisp as it usually is.
That's we'll forgive everything. We'll forgive the bird. We'll forgive the house move. And we will see you all next week for a bit of sort of Wimbledon history.
Yeah, and don't forget to sign up. 15th
yes.
August, 7 p.m.
15th August, very close, 2 weeks away very now. Ah. 2 weeks away, hang on, that's not right.
Yeah, 2 weeks away.
Oh, it is 2 weeks, yeah, it is.
2 weeks away.
Yeah, oh my goodness. Crazy. Yes, yeah, so come and sign up for that, and we'll see you next week, everyone.
Have a good week, guys.
Bye.